Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
It's good to have you listening this hour. Of course, it's brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. Guys, it is Monday where B-dubs is football. We're going to talk about all the stuff we saw over the weekend. Wild Card Weekend was just that. It was wild. And we'll get into it as part of our strong arm story of the day. But, Mike, the news coming off from the weekend for us here with our Atlanta Falcons was the firing of Jimmy Lake after just one season. Jimmy Lake was the defensive coordinator. The defense failed us. We know this. And the front office officially made it, official, should I say, when everybody wanted this done the day after the last game of the season. They did it, Mike, on a Saturday, which was 3 days after the general manager had spoken. Now, why does that matter? Only because maybe we could have gotten a little bit more clarity into the entire situation. But now, right, guys, we are searching for a new DC, and we also need a new defensive line coach as Jay Rogers was let go as well.
Yeah, and you and I were saying this earlier to some guys who are not really catching our drift. It's not the biggest thing, but yeah, I would like to be able for the media, because we were on the radio at the time, couldn't get there, but the idea that you could say, hey, you know, why did you fire the defensive coordinator? What were the goals set? Was it a combination of, you know, was he not implementing what the coach wanted? Did the coach get more involved? You know, you could ask, is any defensive coordinator going to be successful if you can't find impact players in the draft? And that's a loaded question, but that's also been part of the problem. We just don't have the Jims and Joes. So a lot of guys today are, I wasn't trying to start people going bananas and looking up 3-4 versus 4-3, but Robert Saleh traditionally has been a 4-3. We're implementing a Raheem Morris 3-4, but that might be something that could change. If I'm honest, Carl, I don't want anything to do with Jeff Ulbrich. He didn't really do anything. The Jets defense, statistically, if I'm wrong, Chris, you're a Jets fan, went backwards.
It did.
After he took over from Robert Saleh, even when Hassan Reddick finally got on the field. So, with all due respect, seen that, thanks, but no thanks. And watch, we'll probably go down that road because he knows him. Raheem and these guys all know each other.
Yeah, they do. And some of the names that are being thrown out there, again, let's not run with anything, but I get it. There's a lot of rumors out there. I don't start them. I just talk about them once they're out. The Saleh thing is interesting, but I think he wants to still be a head coach. He got a taste of that, Mike. He is still considered, listen, for the time that he was with the Jets, now people realize he actually did a really good job. For what he was asked to do, which was run the defense, they did a good job. So he's going to be interviewed for a variety of jobs here. There are now 7 jobs open as the Cowboys move on and part ways with Mike McCarthy, which we'll talk more about as well. The Ryan Nielsen thing is interesting only because, really? He was just here. And then Doug Peterson goes to the Jags, and then he gets fired because the staff gets let go. I don't know about that either, Mike. But either way, I will say this. I want somebody with experience. I want somebody who's done it. And I want somebody that Ra and this staff can trust. Jimmy Lake is a nice guy, but he had never called plays before. He had never been a DC. And so at this level, I'm talking about at the right NFL level, Mike, I think that matters. And listen, if you're asking Ra to jump in periodically, that's cool. But the head coach shouldn't be having to do 2 jobs if that's not what he wants to do. And I think that's what happened at the end of this season.
Jacksonville, by the way, in case you're wondering, had 3 more sacks than we did, for those wanting to see the return of Ryan Nielsen. And they've actually, you know, they've got some younger defensive players. They've drafted high, and apparently it just isn't working. That just seems like a hot mess. There was an article in Sporting News that basically says Shad Khan's like an absentee owner. You know, it's kind of just like, yeah, whatever. Whatever you guys think you got to do. And then they retained Trent Baalke. A lot of folks were kind of surprised about that move at the time. So either way, these jobs aren't – maybe that's what I said to you earlier. Maybe Robert Saleh comes here for a year, works as a DC, and then turns our defense around. The next year gets back to being a head coach with a better job. Because this cycle of teams that are looking for coaches isn't the best one.
No,
if we're honest.
No, I get what you're saying. And listen, if that plays out, Saleh's got experience again. And this idea that – again – the NFL is like 6 degrees of separation.
Everybody knows everybody.
Okay. And when you say, well, Saleh's connection to Raheem Morris, it's not. They didn't necessarily work together from my understanding, but I do know this. Rod knows a lot of guys that he did work with and one that he trusts in a lot, and that's Kyle Shanahan. So, Mike, if Kyle Shanahan picks up the phone and says, yeah, absolutely, that's the dude, you don't think Rod's going to trust him and say, okay, cool. Like, that's how this works. And I know people don't want to believe that. Like, oh, it's like the Patriots. They hired Vrabel today. Was that a surprise to you that Kraft immediately fires Gerard Mayo and then goes gets the guy that he's...
Well, you get your two obligatory African-American candidates for the Rooney Rule and you go right to Vrabel.
It's ridiculous.
But that's what they did. It's the Patriots. I'm curious to see how it goes, but Vrabel says he gets along good with the personnel department and the GM, and Vrabel knows what he's doing. Vrabel here would have been interesting. That would have been very interesting here in Atlanta. I would have certainly sounded
as the head coach?
Yes. I would have definitely been in for... Well, you know him more than I do, but in the few times I've had a chance to sit down with him, he's very impressive.
He's tough, man. And here's what's crazy. I just found this out over the weekend because I kind of laughed. He did the Jets interview only to tick off Kraft to say, if you really want me, you better come get me.
Create a sense of urgency, right?
He could have easily said, I'm not doing the Jets interview, knowing he really was going to get the job with New England. But he only did it to tick Kraft off, which Kraft then lost his mind and went, we got to hire him now. And they did.
What are we waiting for here, son? Get on it. By the way, I brought this up to you Friday for guys that missed it. Because, man, everybody was there at us kilter with your schedule. Why doesn't Coach Raheem just coach the defense?
Because it's hard.
I know that some coaches can coach offense, and I know it. I'm just saying, if he did get involved with the defense, good and bad, because we got after the quarterback, but then we also had debacles like the Minnesota secondary fall apart, and then what happened in this last game of the season. So you got to take the good with the bad. But I'm just saying, Raheem did a really good job with the Rams. That's how we got the job here.
Yeah. Mike, calling plays is different than being a defensive coordinator in the National Football League. And the reason is, where's my piece of paper? You see those big pieces of paper
right.
on the sideline?
The giant Chinese menu.
Right. I'm dictating what I want to do, and I got all these calls. You know what you're doing on defense? Reacting to that. It's harder. I'm not saying you can't do it, but that is one reason why a lot of these defensive coaches take themselves out of it. I'm just telling you the secret sauce here, okay? That's why guys don't come in and go, yeah, I'm going to be the DC and the head coach. I actually think Rod did the right thing in just allowing himself to be the guy to manage the team and manage the clock.
Right.
Now, we got to do a better job of that, but I think that's the right move, and you're seeing more coaches do that, Mike, because when you come in and you say, hey, I want to call the defense and I want to be the head coach, you're taking on a lot because now you're having to adjust to things that actually happen in game. It's difficult.
A couple guys we mentioned earlier, Steve Wilks. What happened, though, with the 49ers? Did Shanahan just throw him under the bus?
I think so.
You know, because that was one where
The Super Bowl, after the Super Bowl.
Right, he was fired, and it was a John Lynch. It was hot. I don't know where that went, but that was, you're right, after the loss of the Super Bowl, and there were some really big gaps and gaffes in that defense at times, and they moved on from Steve. But Wilkes, aside from that, and that's the biggest game of your life,
dude, I thought
he had a great rep.
He's done it, you're right, as a DC, and I thought he did a really good job with Carolina, Mike.
Yes, and he might have gotten a chance to be a head coach after that interim job.
That's right.
You're right, with the Carolina game.
No, I would not be mad at Steve Wilks, and here's the thing. Like, this is why I said some of this is window dressing.
And again, you got after 1 year in Arizona, and that's another dysfunctional franchise.
It's terrible. For those of you who don't know, Wilks was at our practices early in camp. And you guys didn't get a chance to be there, so you didn't see some of the people we saw for a few days or maybe a week. And some of these guys were walking around and were like, what is he doing here? And it was just like, oh, he's cool. And, you know, they're friends with such and such. But that happens all across the league. But now, Mike, when you have an opening, is that a guy you call? Some of these names, again, don't get overly excited. I am not going to – I am refusing to tell you, yes, absolutely, this guy's the guy, because I don't believe that. I don't believe
it. Well, another name, and again, you got to separate him from head coach. Think of him just as a defensive coordinator. Same goes for Robert Saleh and that, you know, the Aaron Rodgers soap opera that he probably, you know, maybe ceded too much control, or at least the vibe was, the perception was. Okay, what about Brandon Staley? Highly regarded as a defensive coordinator with the Rams, and from that, 1 year with that job, then he went and got the Chargers head coaching job, and he was in over his head, and eventually got.
He was.
He's working right now as an assistant head coach with the 49ers.
Yeah, he was. Oh, you mean Kyle gave him another shot?
That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, like, that is, and again, they were decimated by injuries. I mean, it's a hard year to judge the 49ers, even though Fred Warner's All-Pro again for the third straight year, first team. They still, if they're healthy, Mike, that defense should be one of the best in the league. I just don't know if I want the stigma that comes with Staley. Staley, it feels like he's a guy, you said it, as a head coach over his head. Could he come here and be a great defensive coordinator because he's done it? Maybe. He's got experience. I do know that. But I don't know if that's the guy I would lean on. Because whoever gets this job, you're going to be tasked with a couple different things.
Right.
One, development. I keep saying this. We got to develop these young players, Mike. We cannot continue to draft these guys and just expect them to walk on the field and be seven-year vets. Development, and then are you putting guys in the right position to be successful? Example, Judon should never be in coverage.
No.
That should never happen.
But that's, you know, that goes back to, that's the Dan Quinn 3-4 where you're going to let your outside linebacker.
If he can run.
Yeah, if he's, you know, if he's 23, you know, and he's that guy. I mean, I just don't, I didn't like it with Vic Beasley. I don't like it with Judon. All right, I'll throw more names. Now, again, we're getting to the point where maybe you Falcon fans in your cars right now are kind of holding your nose. One last one. Dennis Allen, former Saints head coach, defensive coordinator under Sean Payton.
It's not bad.
Talk about developing guys.
That's not bad.
Carl, nobody could fix Marcus Davenport.
No, because he was a bad player. But you know what? That's not bad.
All right, that's just some names off the top of our heads.
All right, guys, we'll see where it goes. Jimmy Lake gets fired after one season, and now we got a void to fill. And we can't wait around, by the way. As soon as these coaches start to fill their staff, some of these guys that you may be interested in are going to.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
Oh, this weekend was nuts. We got a game tonight, guys. Wild Card Weekend continues. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 in the game. And Mike, Russell Wilson has already come out and says he wants to remain with the Steelers ahead of his pending free agency.
Ooh. Okay. I mean, no, here's the thing. If you're the Steelers, knowing that this is kind of a meh, I mean, draft where you're at, unless you're going to move heaven and earth to go get a guy and have to beat out, you know, another, you know, two dozen teams or whatever. The you know, but what's that contract going to look like? Is it Mr. Unlimited going to want some loot?
You're right.
I mean, like, I don't know what that. I mean, it's got to be. I mean, Cousins like contract?
Probably $100 million guaranteed. $100 million for 3 years guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. The Steelers. There's so many questions. There's probably more questions about the Steelers this offseason since maybe the time they finally put Ben Roethlisberger out to pasture a season too late. You know, we talked about Tomlin, and all of a sudden, you know, it's just like we love Tomlin, and I get it. A lot of Falcon fans, you and I were talking about him earlier. Guys go, oh, I'd take Tomlin here in a heartbeat. I'd fire Raheem for Tomlin right now. Like, well, easy now. But it just. Everything runs its course.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and I mean, Belichick, yeah, he lost his fastball at the end, but the guy also won 6 Super Bowls. Tomlin's won 1.
That's it. Yeah, that's the fundamental problem. But they're getting to the playoffs every year, but they're coming up short. Let's talk about Saturday's games, Chargers-Texans. And in this game, I said, Herbert played terrible. By the way, Ladd McConkey, dog fan, stand up. 9 catches for, wait, is this right? 197 yards and a touchdown. I mean, Ladd is that dude. He's unbelievable.
He's the only guy that was catching passes. He actually had one drop. But, I mean, for the most part, if you watch that game, I said to Carl, because I bet it. Didn't pick it on the show. But, yes, am I bitter? Are you sensing the bitterness coming through the microwave, the microphone? Yes. Yes. Because I bet the – and I was like, you should be up 14 freaking nothing. The Texans were listless, lifeless, three and out.
They were.
And then eventually, you know, the Chargers – and then as you said, they got a spark with C.J. Stroud, got a score, and then the Chargers, Herbert started forcing and throwing ridiculously bad passes.
4 turnovers for him in this game. This was the – I think the last one because the final score was 32-12, and this is Derek Stingley getting a pick.
Herbert has time, throws downfield over the middle, and intercepted by Stingley. He takes it across the 30, and he's down at the 34-yard line. 2 picks in the game for Derek Stingley Jr. 4 picks on the night for the Texans.
That is killer. Meanwhile, the Ravens just overwhelmed the Steelers. I said this earlier, guys, they ran for 200 yards against the Steelers. Mm. And Mike Tomlin, now, I just told you, Russell Wilson is put out there today. He wants to remain a Steeler. Tomlin was asked after the game this weekend if that was going to happen.
You know, I'm not ready to, you know, take a big picture approach. You know, I'm really assessing what happened today, man. And I'm certainly appreciative of their efforts tonight. But I can say that largely for the entire season. They're 2 quality people, 3 quality people at the quarterback position, man. And really appreciate what they poured into this.
Mike, he was 20 of 29, 270 and 2 touchdowns. Russ didn't turn it over. The Ravens were just better. Lamar was just better. Derrick Henry was just better.
Right. I mean, Munkin's it's his world. We talked earlier about the Josh Allen, and certainly Romo and Nance are beating the drum that, you know, this year Josh Allen should be the MVP, even though he's been MVP twice, but this year's numbers are even better than what Lamar Jackson has won it with. You know, the thing with Josh is, and this is where I think if you want to split hairs on that argument, I'd make them both co-MVP if I was going to be a writer for that. They don't give people like me the vote. But here's the thing, Carl. I would say that Josh Allen is doing more with less. Keon Coleman is still a rookie who is inconsistent at times. He had a touchdown yesterday, but he's getting the ball to his running backs. He's got, you know, like Mac friggin' Hollins is on that team. Think about that.
Right.
So there's just a lot of meh, and the Ravens have finally made a concerted effort in the last 2 years of giving some skill positions around Lamar Jackson.
No doubt about it. Meanwhile, as we talk about the Packers and Eagles, Packers were decimated with injuries. The Eagles, guys, I thought their defense, their defense, again, may get them to another Super Bowl. And now you add Saquon, who had 25 carries for 119 yards. Here's Jalen Hurts, who, Mike said it, didn't play well, but played well enough.
Hurts in the gun. Hurts takes the football. He is going to throw. He does in the flat. The nice catch by Goddard, who breaks the tackle across the five. Touchdown!
Goddard, beast. He beasted him.
That was a nasty touchdown.
He beasted him.
Mike, he pushed him in the face like three times, didn't he?
Yeah, man. The Dallas – and did you see, by the way, who was the defensive back for the Packers, Chris, who was – Valentine. You see the players getting – the guys are jawing on the sideline.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
How you letting that happen? Because God is like, one, two. It's like, three, you're out as he gets to the end zone. There were some moments in that game, and then –
Yeah,
and then, you know, I think the Josh Jacobs run where he carried like three Eagles into the end. I mean, it was marked down to like the half-foot line, and eventually he punches it in. But there were two, I mean, you want to talk, I mean, manning up in the playoffs kind of plays. I mean, that's the playoff football. That's one of the things that, you know, Brady was talking about, and he was saying that Josh Jacobs, and from Brady's perspective, and we got a tip cap to Brady, he's been there, he's saying not everybody on the Packers was bringing that intensity.
No, I felt the same way. And I also thought Jordan Love, look, did he play timid?
He was – the ball was not coming out on schedule. I thought there
was – I know he's got the elbow injury.
I think he was patting the baby a few times. Sometimes – I don't think he trusted his receivers. Everybody started going out because Watson's out. Then Dobbs goes out with another concussion. He looked like dead on his feet. They basically carry him into the locker room.
They did.
And then everybody else on both sides of the ball just starts dropping like flies. They literally lost a platoon. But I don't know, man. It just – he just – it didn't have it. And in the first half – how much of that is LaFleur to get him into the flow of the game?
Yeah. You're right. But I know that they talked a little bit about that.
They couldn't run the ball.
Before the game was his elbow and his accuracy may be affected. Right? Kind of, you know, floating some of these balls and whatnot.
But I just thought they couldn't, you know, two things. We know that, you know, with the Packers were able to run the ball. I said Josh Jacobs, 81. Where's the play action off that to get him? I just thought at times LaFleur, I don't know. You asked me a question. I think Jordan Love was terrible. I'm making excuses for the Dukes. I like his game.
He didn't have it. He didn't. Turnovers kill, man. All right, what about the Commanders and Bucks? I thought this was the best game of the weekend. It could have gone either way. I picked the Commanders. I liked them in the upset. And when I say that, I'm talking about the points. I think it was three, Mike, right. And it may have gone down to 2.5. Either way, they not only cover, but they win the game. And, guys, Jaden Daniels, I said this earlier, they had seven times this season where they scored on the last play, whether it's a field goal, Hail Mary, touchdown, and win the game. And, Mike, they got in this situation last night, and you were kind of like, oh. And if you hadn't watched the Commanders, you thought they might fold up. This kid is the real deal, man. Let's hear, you know, Jaden Daniels to Terry McLaurin. This put them up 19-17. Ultimately, again, it was tied at 20-20, and then they kicked the field goal to win it. And that was fourth down.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. And, you know, the ability to get you in the defense, to get you out of your rhythm. And I know we mentioned this a few times today, because Falcon fans always say whenever we play a mobile quarterback, why don't we spy him? Okay, well, the Bucs put two guys to spy him to try to basically do what we couldn't do, which is keep Jaden Daniels between the hash marks. And that really blew up because that's one less defender out there. It's to bracket your tight ends, to bracket the running backs releasing out. To me, the moment of that game was the Baker Mayfield fumble. You know, I mean, it just you're trying to get the ball in motion. The timing's got to be perfect. It was too close. Wide receiver and him can't make the exchange, and that blew it. Because remember, Washington's leading at that point, 17. I should say, that score, it was Tampa Bay was up 17-13 when Mayfield fumbles.
It's a big play. All right, we got a game tonight. Wildfires have forced the Rams and Vikings to Arizona. So it's a neutral site. I don't think you could have said the Rams had a home field advantage. If the Vikings fans wanted to make the trip out there under normal circumstances, they would have been able to get in the building. But, Mike, who do you like tonight and why?
Well, it gets back to that old narrative, which I think a lot of folks have been talking about the last few weeks. Do you believe in Sam Darnold or don't you? The Lions kind of just basically went 3 yards and then turned left or right and stopped Sam Darnold. I said the Lions did, and he couldn't seem to find receivers. He was rushing throws. Balls were coming up way too high, not accurate. You figure the Rams will repeat that. The Rams have got the horses on that front seven to get there. And I just, even though you've got such great skill position, it's nut cutting time, as you like to say. I don't believe in Darnold. I'll go with Matthew Stafford. I'll go with Sean McVay and the Rams in this one, even though it is a neutral site.
I agree. I feel the same way. And listen, the Rams are 10-7. Vikings are a 14-win team this year. They do. When they're hitting on all cylinders, and we saw it, guys. I mean, in our game, it's 21-21, and then all of a sudden we make a couple mistakes, and this thing got out of hand. But I don't know if they're hitting on all cylinders right now. And some people say, well, listen, they played their worst game, Mike, last week of the season. Right. They're not going to come back and play that poorly again.
But you played your best game of the whole friggin' season, the number one seed on the line. That's why that doesn't wash for me.
I'm with you. And you could have been sitting, by the way, this week. Either way, that game is tonight. It's the final wild card game. The winner of this game goes to the Eagles, by the way. And we already know what the games are going to look like next week in the divisional round. And I can't wait. I'm excited for the Bills and Ravens game, which is at 6:30 on Sunday. Mm. The winner of this game goes to the Eagles. That game is also going to be Sunday at 3 o'clock. And then Saturday, all right, two games and two games. Texans at Chiefs, 4:30, 8 o'clock, Commanders and Lions.
Yeah, man, everybody just can't wait to see the Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen battle of the potential MVPs showdown. That's on CBS with Romo and Nance. You just kind of have a feeling that the Texans at Arrowhead, it's kind of like the story of their season. Maybe they score 24 points. The Chiefs just kind of monkey around and then just throw a switch and they get back in the playoffs. I think I like the Chiefs against the Texans. But yeah, man, it's.
Mike, they're two games away from playing 4-3-peat.
That's the difference of being. That's why the number one seed, since they've restructured it to seven, just one team gets the bye, is just so huge. And that's why it's big for Detroit. Detroit apparently is going to get David Montgomery back, along with Jahmyr Gibbs, according to Dan Campbell, speaking with the media.
All right, we're going to talk about what happened in college football because we now know who's playing for the national championship. And I got to tell you, we saw coaching mistakes and blunders in these semifinal games that are going to come back to haunt a lot of people. We'll talk about it. We know who's playing in the national championship game. It's going to happen January 20th right here in our backyard at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And, Mike, listen, we thought that the Dogs had a legitimate chance to get there. Notre Dame knocks them off. Notre Dame then knocks off Penn State. And then we saw the Ohio State beat Texas in a game in which you're at the 8-yard line. If you're the University of Texas and Steve Sarkisian, you have an opportunity to punch it in, tie this score up, and who knows what happens at that point. But instead, it's a strip sack, scoop and score for Jack Sawyer. And, Mike, it changed the game. And then all of a sudden, now you're down 14. It was over. That moment, it was done.
Yeah, and I was feeling for you, brother. I know, Chris, we were talking about, you know, we ride and die with our boy. And, man, it was just one where you're sitting, you're going, all I could think of watching that goal line scenario was kind of what Ohio State did in Happy Valley against Penn State. And, you know, Penn State, okay, they got athletes, but this is Texas. And I just thought, man, how are you trying to go sideways on a toss sweep when you've got a front seven that looks like an NFL team?
Four dive plays up the middle. I don't give a damn. Four times. And if we don't get it, nobody says we didn't go sideline to sideline, Mike, to your point, and go, oh, well, we ran a jet sweep. How often, Falcon fans, do we get upset when we see a jet sweep on the goal line?
Right.
And ridiculous.
You're watching this game go down, and you're saying, oh, that's not going to cut it. You know, and then, of course, everyone knows by now that, you know, they were roommates at Ohio State. You know, sorry, they've all got the whole storyline about how he's like, oh, blank you, man, after the game because he takes it to the house. And he literally gets that hop right into his hands and he's gone. But, yeah, I just felt this, and I hate to sound like, you know, we kind of nailed it, but when you and I were talking about it last week, you worry about Sark getting tight. And you just sometimes you need Quinn Ewers to elevate his game.
And he couldn't.
And he just couldn't do it. And no. The receivers at Texas, if I'm honest, were kind of a little bit.
Outside of Golden, who declared for the draft today, it was blah. Let's hear Ryan Day talk about Jack Sawyer and why he is now. And they're saying this. And I don't disagree. When you make those kind of plays, you become a legend. Vince Young's a legend at the University of Texas, Mike, because of what he did against USC in that moment in the Rose Bowl. There are legendary plays and players in college football. Jack did that for the Ohio State to put them in a position to win a national championship.
I can't say enough about Jack Sawyer. He's a guy who loves being a Buckeye. He loves his teammates. He's done everything we've asked him to do. He's a captain. He's everything, you know, that we could possibly ask for in a captain. And to make a play like that in that moment, that we talked about before the game, if you want to leave a legacy behind, you become a legend.
By the way, did they ever at Texas cop to the fact that Arch Manning was concussed? after that hit, because the one thing I kept thinking of, and I don't want to bother you because I know you're in your man cave watching the game. I just thought when you get in that red zone, that meant it was Arch Manning time.
It should have been.
And where's his ability to get to the corner?
Should have been.
And I just wonder, if you guys aren't familiar with the play I'm talking about, he was ruled down by contact. The ball kind of comes out as the knee hits, but he was down. But he took a hit. I just wonder if he was just... was out of it.
It's possible. That was for a first down, and then they thought the ball came out. This replay showed it didn't, and then we didn't see him again.
That's why I'm thinking. At the sideline, if they just never answered the question, but it was, yeah, that's, and you and I debate, we talked about this in both Georgia games, needed more Arch. I could have used more cowbell. I could have used more Arch cowbell, Manning.
That's right.
You know, and next year it's his job, right?
It will be his job. As far as Sawyer, here's what he said on being an Ohio State legend. And by the way, you got to finish this. You got to beat Penn State.
Oh, they will.
Okay? Here's Sawyer talking about being a legend.
Well, you'll be a Buckeye legend for life. How does that sound?
I just want to win a national championship.
Yeah, and I don't want to...
Excuse me, they got to beat...
Notre Dame. Don't want to be a buzzkill on this. Look, I like Marcus Freeman. My dad loved Notre Dame. I've never vibed it because of the sense of entitlement and all. They always work their way into the playoffs or postseason. But it's not Brian Kelly. It's a more likable Notre Dame team. You know, I mean, the resiliency... Drew Aller for Penn State.
Tough.
I mean, I don't know how NFL, you're not going to be judged on one game because we've seen quarterbacks have stinkers. Not everybody can be Joe Montana in the Cotton Bowl for Notre Dame and then go on to the 49ers. But still, man, he just, talk about a meltdown.
Yeah, he didn't show me anything. And if you're a Penn State fan, I mean, like, that had to be a very disappointing performance. Hey, something else happened over the weekend I thought was really cool. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we talk about the road to the college football playoff. More Falcon conversation coming up. Our conversation with Mark Raimondi here in the 6 o'clock hour as we kind of, set the stage for what's next, guys. And many of you were with us in saying, hey, somebody's got to pay the price for what happened. The defense was bad. That means the defensive coordinator should go, and they fired him. So we'll get into that coming up in the 6. But, Mike, the game day crew had a chance to tell Nick Saban that he's being inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. And I thought this was really cool. And, by the way, I actually love Saban on the game day. He's really good. He's entertaining. He's fun. But this is when they told him that he's going into the College Football Hall of Fame.
And this December, coming up in Las Vegas National Football Foundation Awards Dinner, their new Hall of Fame class will be announced. And headlining that class will be the greatest college football coach in the history of the sport, Nick Saban.
Hey. Nick is going in.
Congratulations. Congrats, man.
I didn't know anything about it.
It's happening right now.
Yeah, man, and I can't argue anything that Reese said, and good for Nick, man. I'm getting a kick out of Nick. I love when he drops a cuss in there, and they go, Nick, you're on television.
That's right, he forgets.
It's been fun to watch, man, and like, as we said, there's always, I do get it. Is it the VRBO commercial he does where he owns the house? And he goes, no, it's an approval, you can't do that. I'm serious, no showers more than 5 minutes.
It is funny.
But he does have a lighter side, and good for him, and that's a no-brainer. Well, I've always, and this, let me preface this by saying this is not a knock on the College Football Hall of Fame because it's an amazing facility. We love being there. I'm just talking about how they decide who gets in because some guys have to wait forever. Some guys go in immediately.
Yeah.
But either way, he's certainly deserved. And yes, you'd think if there was a waiting period, they'd waive it. They didn't. He's in.
I agree. And that's the other part. Like, he's out of college football now. He shouldn't have to wait 10 years, to your point. Right. Get him in there. Hey, I do want to mention one other thing here about college, and it's college basketball. The Dogs are in the top 25, Mike. They are 23rd in the country after this weekend. Auburn takes over the number one spot, but you still have Alabama and Florida and Tennessee and Kentucky, all SEC teams. And A&M is right outside the top 10, and here comes Georgia at 23.
I just saw this from Brent Rollins, who writes for UGA Sports on Rivals. It's pretty funny. It's a seating map, I think, of either on StubHub or SeatGeek for Stegman, and it's the seats and the ticket prices for Auburn and Georgia on Saturday. And it's like, well, damn, it's like, wow, it's like widespread panic playing? Those are pretty impressive ticket prices. I mean, you're looking at like $267 to be just a few rows off the angle. I mean, anyway, people, the good news is there's a buzz. We've talked about, can Mike White crank it up? And that's something really cool to see. And for George, good for them.
It is. Turtle just said we're going to be joined by their point guard on Thursday. Is that right? We're going to grab him?
Yeah, we're going to be joined by Silas DeMary Jr., who's having a great season, averaging almost 12 a game.
Good team.
Very cool.
All right.
And while we're doing some random nuggets, we didn't get to this on Friday's show, but talking to a couple of my Clemson buddies, Dabo, kind of under the radar a little bit because everyone's so focused on the games now with our playoff and all, but Dabo Swinney did get into the transfer portal.
Okay.
And he did take 3 transfers. And this is something, you guys know, he was fighting it for a number of reasons, and he certainly was able to look. He got into the playoffs without using the transfer portal. You can give him tip your cap for that. Went home early against Texas. But he does get Tristan Smith, a wide receiver from Missouri State, a defensive lineman from Purdue, and Jeremiah Alexander, a defensive lineman from the Tide. So he's getting in the portal. So for years, he's kind of been not going to do it. But even, like, don't die on that hill. Just show the flexibility. The same flexibility Saban used to use his position, Carl, like as a pulpit, to say, oh, I don't like this or I don't like that. Eventually, he just adapt to it. You know, just like, oh, this up-tempo Auburn offense. And then Alabama would get one.
Right.
Right. And all, oh, I don't know about this name, image, likeness. Well, I got a million, you know. He would adapt. And I think Dabo's got to show that same kind of flexibility.
I'm with you. And I just think, too, what you need, if you use it the right way, it can benefit your team. I do not think you go into the portal and get 70 new guys every year. That's not going to help you. But, Mike, to your point, I need a guard. I need a wide receiver. Ask Georgia. I go get a couple of guys to supplement what I already have. I think it can help you. And that's what I think the good coaches are learning about this thing. I do understand the old guard of that's right. not how we do it and that's not how I'm going to win until you don't win.
Right. And then all of a sudden the sense of urgency creeps into it. And now, you know, and look, I'm not saying you got to overdo it. Florida State is a poster child, but don't do it too much. Everyone's going to watch and see how Indiana, you know, after Cignetti moves on from the guys that he brought from James Madison, how does he retool? So there's more than one way to be a champion. I think, look at Notre Dame. Notre Dame's always got the great recruiting nationwide. He's also augmented it with, you know, look at his quarterback, Riley Leonard, you know, picked up at Duke. I saw this guy take a beating at Florida State.
Yeah.
Always saw the toughness. Now, but that's another thing. Real quick, while we're just talking about, I mentioned the concussion thing with Arch Manning. A lot of folks feel Riley Leonard got knocked into tomorrow. And if this is the NFL standards, maybe he's not back in that game in the Orange Bowl.
Well, who was reporting is my thing. Because they did not report he was concussed. And then he came back and played. We said this. I told you Friday. Like, there was no way he was not coming back.
Right.
Who does the reporting? Because I thought he was out too, Mike. I thought he was done.
Well, it's what was the old Snickers commercial they did a couple years ago where it's the guy gets knocked out. He goes, "Where are you? Kansas City. Who are you? I'm Batman. You want to ride? You want to ride with Batman?" So I mean, look, we don't monkey around when it comes to concussions. But there was an article a day ago from the South Bend newspaper. Notre Dame's Marcus Freeman says, "You trust your doctors." Well, yeah, if they're the team friggin' doctors. I'm not trying to be, like, again, I'm not trying to make this into a conspiracy theory, but Freeman said there's nothing different in college football playoff games from the regular season protocol that Notre Dame used. We have a medical professional team, so it's the team. It's not the NFL. This isn't like a third party, like college football, like the Orange Bowl. See, who's going to pay for it? Well, the college football playoff committee? They're not paying for it. The Orange Bowl's not paying for it.
No.
So it's in staff. Because you and I, we were debating this on Friday, and the article then came out over the weekend. So, no, it's just a Notre Dame doctor signed off on a Notre Dame player getting back in the biggest game Notre Dame's played in 5 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that was curious, to say the least. But they got over it. They're past it. And then now they're getting ready to play for a national championship. It should be interesting. And what do you think, by the way, what do you think the number's going to be? You think it's going to be a high-rated game?
Well, and it's interesting, the numbers were down, and this goes back to our viewing habits. We've kind of been conditioned to watch. If you watch on the Prime games, because most folks have Amazon, but the Thursday night games, they were down. The numbers were down 10 million viewers from last year. Now, of course, it was Georgia in the Michigan Rose Bowl game. And that was, and again, that was a New Year's Day game. This is Thursday night.
Was home.
You know, it's a week, and it's a week so much later than New Year's. So it's a little bit, you got to take it with a grain of salt. We've never had college football games this late into the year. And of course, the championship, of course, comes up a week from today at Mercedes-Benz. But the numbers were down. And I had to laugh. I told Carl, I said, how are the numbers down when everybody from El Paso to Jacksonville couldn't get out of their house on Thursday night,
right,
waiting for Snowmageddon or experiencing the snow? You'd have thought, I don't know if that just is a testament that SEC country doesn't give a flip about Penn State and Notre Dame, but the numbers were down a little bit. But it's still not the worst rated Orange Bowl. We've had that when there was a New Year. Remember we had the New Year's Eve games? Which nobody really liked that.
Yeah, because it messed up your plans.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but the numbers, for what it's worth, were down. Oklahoma and, I should say, Ohio State and Texas, their numbers took a bit of a hit, but wasn't as far a drop-off as the Orange Bowl.
Two of the most storied programs in the history of college football playing in a national championship game. Whether you like them or you have a rooting interest, I do think the number's going to be good. And again, it's January 20th. For those of you who don't know, that's MLK Day.
Right.
So most people will be off. And, Mike, NBA, it's a big day for the National Basketball Association, but the game is not – it's the only game that's on. So my guess is people will watch. People will be interested in seeing what plays out.
Right. But you feel it's going to be a blowout? You think Ohio State, Texas, I mean, Notre Dame can't do what Texas did at times.
Notre Dame's defense is really good, though, man.
They are.
They're really good.
But, man, I mean, I just.
Ask Georgia. I get it. Georgia's offense is not as dynamic as Ohio State, and they certainly don't have those wide receivers. But, Mike, Texas shut down Ohio State's star wide receiver. They had a great game plan for him. That is not why they lost the game. So if Notre Dame can do that, I think it's Jeremiah Smith, I believe it is.
That's correct.
You give yourself a chance. If that kid is catching 9 or 10 balls and 2 touchdowns, you're going to have a long night.